I was in here from the womb, and I'll die in here.
Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Defender 7 Medical Tuesday Night Broadcast with your host, Colonel Kimberly Purvis. Before we get on with our show, I need to read our disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed on Defenders 7 radio show and Facebook page are those of the callers and or authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the Defenders 7. Now, for those of you new just tuning into us, if you haven't already, check out our national Facebook page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7. Before you click on that join button, just know we expect all of our members and future members to participate throughout everything we do here in the Defender 7. We're not just a Facebook page. We are a humanitarian American patriot group, not a militia. If you find that it's nothing that you want to be part of, you're free to leave. No hard feelings. We're also on YouTube. We have a Defender 7 YouTube channel. Please shoot over there and click on that subscribe button. A lot of good information and videos are posted. We're also on MeWe. If you click on organizations and scroll down to Defenders 7 Humanitarian American Patriot Group. Now for tonight's show and all the shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we enjoy it when you call in with your thoughts and opinions. And that number to call, area code 914-205-5773. Again, the number to call to participate. Area code 914-205-5773. We also have a website, which has a store on it and a donate button. Type in all lowercase letters, www.defenders, Roman numeral V as in Victor, with two small I's, .com. 100% of all proceeds from sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities throughout all 50 states in a time of need. We're not like the other groups where we keep 90% and only distribute 10%. All 100% goes to our communities. This is the only way that we're able to do what we do here. So please, by all means, purchase something or click that donate button. Every dollar helps. Help us to help you and our communities during natural disasters, shit hits the fan situations, anything. That's what we're here for. Help make our group bigger and better. Invite your friends, invite family. Share our posts. Share our group posts. Share our shows. That's how we're getting the members that we're getting. Now I'd like to hand the microphone over to our colonel, your host, Kimberly Purvis. And on the line, we also have Major of Wisconsin, Miss Lorna Munson, and
Wisconsin.
From Pennsylvania, Miss Maria Delamain.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Okie dokie. Shitty.
I'll be doing all right if it stopped raining.
Ah, I wish it would rain here a little bit.
I just found out my brother got diagnosed with mantle cell lymphoma.
Oh no!
God!
Yeah.
Hi, my friend has lung cancer, and he just now got medical insurance, and he's on oxygen. He doesn't think that they're going to be able to do anything, so I understand. It's hard. My husband died of cancer.
This is a rare cancer. It's a type of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Well, is there any kind of treatment?
They can't use regular chemo from what he's read up on. His next appointment isn't for a couple weeks, but it's got to be a very aggressive chemo.
Well, I'll
Sorry
keep him in
guy.
My prayers.
My dog is determined to get out of the fence. Oh, shit. Oh, she likes to dig. Somebody walked by with their dog. Okay. Phew. Sorry about that. So tonight, Damn, it's hot. I forgot to turn the air back on.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I thought I lost you guys. I thought maybe I hit the wrong button and turned off my speaker. You guys got so quiet.
Oh, I had to go. I had to put mine on mute because my little asshole tried to get out because someone walked by with his dogs.
Oh,
thank God we fixed it because she would have got out. Now she's mad. Go sit down. So, anywho, I thought we would finish up the neuro, because I know we did the brain disorders last week. Where are they at? Neurological. Okay. But before we get started, I was going to say about any news or anything that's like from today before we do anything
I can
else.
Give you a visual. I got
a what?
We can't even see across the lake because all the smoke from Canada's wildfires is here.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty out here.
I know Oregon is on fire big time, and it's burning.
Who's on fire?
Thousands of acres.
Canada.
Where? Oh, Canada. What did you hear about Russia's got like 2.5 million hectares or something like that that's burning?
Oh, wow. No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, I just now saw it. That's after the mosquito tornado they had. Not to mention all the flooding, but then that part of the world has been having a lot of flooding. Even I think Iran has had so much rain there was flooding. That's scary.
Oh, yeah. All these countries are flooding big time.
Yeah.
So
countries
that
never have before.
Those wildfires in Oregon are in California as well. And
yep.
The heat wave is just killing everything.
Washington.
Yeah,
between you got droughts in places you've never had them, and you've got floods in other places they've never had them. I mean, you know, and there, you know, there's two theories. It's either, you know, HAARP, the governments are playing with their, you know, weather machines, and God is fighting back. You know, it's like, it's definitely unprecedented.
Oh, I know. But that's
and then like in China, did you see what happened in China? The flooding, a couple of dams broke, some bridges went down, and they've got sinkholes that they can't see a bottom. They've got subways where people are trapped with water up to their chest. I mean, it's really scary. I feel for the people.
Britain is permanently deploying two warships to the Asian waters over there. Let me see.
And what are they going to do?
China's freaking threatening to nuke Japan, and it's looking like that's what's going to happen. And then
They're going to nuke Japan if Japan tries to defend Taiwan.
Yeah. And Biden's not going to help Japan, which he's going to fuck this country royally. But
he's gotta help Japan.
I know, but he hasn't said shit, and he won't. And China knew that. That's why China's doing it, because they know. Let's see. Oh, and AOC is still trying to tell people capitalism is evil, and she's a retard.
Yeah, we're responsible for Cuba's. For the shape that Cuba is in. It's all our fault because we wouldn't do business with a dictator.
Oh, well. And
Fauci. Oh, my God. That man, he is.
Shit.
Did you see that thing, that confrontation he had with Rand Paul today?
No, I heard about it, but I didn't actually hear it.
I just watched it a couple of, you know, it's good, but you know, the thing is though, whoever's in charge of the committee that he's being questioned by definitely supports him. And when he called Rand Paul a liar and was very smug, you could tell the smirk on his face. He knows he's going to get away with what he did.
They all are. I'm
yeah.
sorry. They all are, you know. But anyway, you know the Ashley Babbitt, a DEA was brandishing his firearm and stuff at her. When she wasn't even doing anything. So it was a DEA agent that shot her.
No, it was Pence's personal guard. They have the name of the guy that shot her.
No.
They
wasn't.
Know exactly who it was. It was a
yeah.
black guy. Not DEA. He was.
Yes, he was. Mark Sammy Ibrahim, or whatever, of Orange County, California. he was displaying his government-issued firearm and DEA badge, and he's the one who shot Ashley Babbitt. This came out today.
The black guy. He's black.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was supposed to be guarding Pence?
No. They wanted to say it was Pence's Secret Service guy, but it wasn't. This guy was a DEA agent, or so he says. That's the whole thing. You know, he had a badge and all that shit.
I don't know if I believe that.
Because
what was he doing there? Because the person that shot her was on the other side of the door and was supposedly the only person, you know, with the gun. I'd have to see more information on that. Can you put some information for me on Telegram so I can see? Because this is the first I'm hearing it. I heard something
else. It came out just 2 hours ago.
Okay.
But,
that might be why. Yeah.
No, I check it. It's on my Google news feed and all that crap, and it came up, and it was just done 2 hours ago.
Okay.
So, anywho. Stupid dog. Wow. So, and then Israel is shooting back at Hamas arson attack because they're trying to burn Israel down. So,
yeah, again.
Again, yeah, it's all. Okay. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and start on here so we can get done with all of these tonight. So the first one of the neurological disorders is BPPV, and that's benign paroxysmal positional vertigo. And vertigo sucks. But BPPV is one of the most common causes of vertigo. And that's a sudden sensation that you're spinning or the inside of your head is spinning. You know, like the games you used to play as a kid, you'd spin around 10 times real fast and then try to walk straight line. Kind of the same thing, except your body's not actually spinning. And it could be from mild to severe. And basically what happens, it can get triggered by specific changes in your head position or if you move it too fast. Sometimes if you move your head too fast a certain way, the equilibrium in your cochlea is off balance and it sucks. Although BPPV can be bothersome, it's rarely serious, except when it increases the chance of falls. I've always had vertigo, but it wasn't always bad. One of my ex-boyfriends, he hit a deer, or a deer hit him, and it shattered the driver's side window. So we put a plastic bag or that thick, heavy plastic, and we taped it to the door to make a window. Well, unfortunately, I would have to drive the vehicle for like an hour each way to work. And the vibrations of the plastic, I don't know what it did, but it messed up my middle ear. I spent 9 days in bed. The vertigo was so bad that I actually had to hang on to furniture and the wall or I'd fall over. And to this day, I still, you know how when you turn over in bed, you just roll over? I actually have to set up slowly, turn, and then lay back down. I can't roll in bed anymore just to roll over. So, and I just treated it with meclizine. And it was like, I don't know, 25 milligrams or whatever. And eventually it stopped. And I'm only bothered now by height and moving water really gets mine going. So benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, the pathophysiology. So to understand it, you have to understand the anatomy and physiology of your inner ear. And there's the bones that you have in your ear. And it's a tubular arm or the cura. And that comes from a barrel-like compartment. And it looks like, actually, it looks like a snail shell. The cochlear, you know, that's what it looks like. Let's see, and the crista ampullaris is a sail-like tower. So you have the three bones that's in your ear, okay? And I'm not going to get too much because that's really confusing. If a person turns suddenly to the right, the fluid within the right horizontal canal slows down because you actually have fluid in there. And it's just like looking at a level for construction, that little bubble inside, you know, and how it moves if it's off balance or if it's not level. Same thing with your middle ear with the cochlea, the cochlea. And it acts as a three-way switch. So when pressed one way, appropriately gives the body a sensation of motion. And the middle or neutral position reflects no motion. So that's what happens. It's kind of like a little gear shift in your ear. So particles in the canal slow and even reverse the movement of the culpa switch and create signals that are incongruous with the actual head movement. So it's just like a misfire is all I could – it's about the, pretty much the way to explain it. Inside the inner ear is a series of canals filled with fluid, and they are oriented at different angles. So your body, like when you bend over, it will balance out. So your body knows how it is. So when the head is moved, the rolling of the fluid inside these canals tells the brain exactly how far, how fast, and in what direction the head is moving. So BPPV is thought to be caused by little calcium carbonate crystals coming loose within the canals. Usually these crystals are held in special reservoirs within other structures of the inner ear. And it's thought that injury or degeneration of the utricle may allow the crystals to escape. I'm trying to explain this picture. Yeah, you can't really explain it. So basically, it could be caused by head injury, degeneration of the vestibular system in the inner ear due to aging, and also damage caused by inner ear disorder. So, and they believe that there's an association between BPPV and osteoporosis. But in a lot of the cases of it, they're not really sure what causes it. So who's at risk to get this type of vertigo? People who suffer from migraines, giant cell arthritis, or arteritis, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, a history of stroke, and head injuries, hey, which is probably the reason why I've got them. It's not clear if treating these conditions might reduce your risk. It will just help minimize any of it ever happening. So some of the symptoms of BPPV is vertigo, dizziness, feeling lightheaded, loss of balance, nausea or vomiting, vision problems, nystagmus, and that's where your eye, if you watch your eye, it'll bounce. And that also happens if you put eardrops in your ear that are cold. Like some have to be stored in the refrigerator or some don't. And you have to actually warm up eardrops if they're stored in the refrigerator. And because it's really cold, it can cause the nystagmus and your ear will bounce. So the symptoms can vary from person to person. And like, say we all have this BPPV. Lorna may have the nausea and vomiting. Maria may have the dizziness and let's see, Bobby can have loss of balance, and I could have the vision problems. But that doesn't mean that nobody has it.
Like COVID.
Huh?
And it sounds like COVID.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just because, and that's what irritates me. I have migraines. I have severe migraines. And I've actually had nurses that want to argue with me. Oh, you can't have, even a doctor has from the VA in Tennessee. Oh, you can't have migraines. Why? Because you don't have the sensitivity to light. Says who? You don't have to have every single symptom to have that issue. You know what I'm saying? It's like a checklist. And some people expect you to have every single symptom, and you're not going to. Just like with COVID. Not everybody loses their sense of smell or taste. And I got it, and it sucked. That's how I knew it wasn't a normal cold. With normal colds, a lot of people will lose their sense of smell because their sinuses are clogged. Same thing. So if you have any of those symptoms, and go see your doctor. And if you need a specialist, they'll send you to an EENT, ears, eyes, nose, and throat doctor. But, yes, the symptoms can last anywhere from hours to days or weeks. And once you know what it is, and like I said, meclizine is pretty much normally what they put you on. And once you start taking it around the clock, it will help. And then you could get to where you only have to take it when it acts up. Now, was it Dramamine? Yes, Dramamine is meclizine. So it's like for people that go travel on boats, planes, and things like that, they get motion sickness, same thing. That's what they use it for also. The BPPV, possible complications, don't drive. Do not operate heavy machinery because you can fall or you could get into an accident. So, and then you can run the risk of falling, breaking a hip, and God forbid you do that because that would suck even more. So your doctor will look for the telltale eye movement of nystagmus, and they may ask you to lay on your back on a table with your head tilted off the back. So instead of your head being on the table, your head's going to be hanging off the back side of the table, and you're going to let your head tilt back. And it's to see if you can control your eye movements. And then the doctor will also look to see if you have symptoms of dizziness happen when your eyes or head moves in a certain direction. And if doing so makes you dizzy for less than a minute, so they kind of guess how long. And they might use something called Frenzel goggles that will detect involuntary eye movements. And I have no idea what those goggles are. I've never seen them before. So I have no idea. So there's some tests that they can run. It's a Dix-Hallpike test. And that's where you lay on your back, and the doctor will rotate your head. And if you have vertigo at the time, it will induce any vertigo symptoms. You might have an ENG or a VNG with electronystagmography, which is an ENG, or a video nystagmography. Good Lord. These check your eye movements and how they react to things that might trigger vertigo. Or you can have an EEG or even an MRI. So, let's see, some of the remedies or treatments, I should say. So it's called the Epley maneuver, and it involves performing a specific series of head movements to dislodge the calcium carbonate crystals from the semicircular canals. And like I said, it looks like a snail. And then if you have like little tubes, like three of them, and they just kind of, they're just little tubes where the fluid goes through them. And that's where the calcium carbonate gets, kind of like a kidney stone going through your ureters to your bladder. Same thing, but a lot smaller. So a trained healthcare professional can administer this treatment and teach people how to perform the movements at home. I'm not going to go over them because God forbid any of you guys do these and do something and you hurt yourself, I'm not getting blamed for it. So if you have issues with vertigo, go talk to your doctor. But it simply is just certain eye movements or head movements to move, you know, to dislodge the crystals. And I don't want to, you know, run the risk of anybody hurting themselves or causing more damage. There's also called the Brandt Daroff exercise. And same thing, there's different movements where you're lying down with your head and your body. And that's another another exercise. So, like I said, the medications, meclizine, which is the generic drug, is Anavert. I mean, Anavert is a drug, meclizine is a generic. And Bonine, Dramamine, and Divert, they're all the same thing. It's kind of like Motrin, Ibuprofen, and Advil. They're all three the same product. You might get Valium. You can also take Dramamine, Phenergan, and Scopolamine. When mine was severe enough, they gave me both the Scopolamine and the Meclizine. So, and sometimes they think it's caused due to a viral infection. So sometimes they may prescribe Zovirax. Or steroids, like prednisone, if there's nerve inflammation that's causing the vertigo. Very rarely, surgery is done. What the surgery is they'll plug part of your ear, your inner ear, to prevent the small calcium crystals from moving in your inner ear canal. So... And one of the complications is loss of hearing. So if you have that type of vertigo when it's acting up, use two or more pillows at night. Avoid sleeping on your side with the ear that's causing the problem facing down. So if it's your left ear, lay on your right side. You don't want to put your left ear down. You want it to be up. Get up slowly. Avoid leaning over to pick things up. Be careful if you have a recliner. Don't go back too fast. Don't go back too far. And also watch out for playing sports. So, and that's it for that. Anybody have any questions about the vertigo?
No.
No,
I know
fine.
It can mess you up. I know it can mess you up. My dad's wife had it. She had to have him come pick her up because she was in the middle of driving when hers hit.
Wow. Yeah, see, that sucks. And you have to know when it hits you. And sometimes it's like a freight train when it does. Like I said, I have a hard time. Like, if I go to the beach and I'm sitting on the shoreline, if I'm standing, like right ankle deep water, maybe a little bit more, if I watch the tide come in and out, that's when I get off balance. I can look straight out at the ocean, no problem, look at the waves. But if I look down at my feet for any length of time, forget it. I'll fall over. Been there, done that. Another thing that bothers me is like in East Tennessee where there's a on the river, there's a railroad track. And you could go down at the access road. It's next to the mountain. So you got a mountain right next to you, like 2 feet away, and then the train. And so that would also mess me up. It's just the fast movement for myself that that causes mine to act up. Okay, so the next one is cervicalgia or neck pain. It's basically just pain or significant discomfort in your neck, especially at the back and or the sides. Lumbago is a similar term to cervicalgia, except that's your lower lumbar instead. It's cervical spine pain or just neck pain. So basically, that's from the area that goes from the first spinal vertebrae down to your seventh. And the first bone of your spine is located about the level of your ears. And the seventh is about the base of your neck. So you C1 to C7. Those. Hold on. Okay. So classification and types of neck pain is acute pain or cervicalgia. And the pain is severe in the neck with stabbing, shooting pain. Referred into the shoulders and arms. And don't forget that a lot of your pain can radiate. So just like how they fixed my shoulder and my elbow, they said I had mild carpal tunnel, but I don't even have carpal tunnel. It's because the pain was from my shoulder. And the nerve that's right there, that's on my shoulder blade, were so tense and knotted up. That's when they did the dry needling. And when the physical therapist did that, it's all but completely stopped. All of the nerve pain all the way down to my fingertips. So that's why they say, or they thought it was coming from my neck. So, that's why they're going to ask you if you have any pain anywhere. They're going to want to know where it started and things like that, and they'll start from the top and work their way around. If you have, like I said, the stabbing, shooting pain in your neck, go see a doctor right away. Don't put it off. Go. Or at least call your doctor to get an appointment. Progressive neurological deficits such as weakness in the arms or loss of feeling and coordination in the arms or legs may indicate nerve damage, and that's what I had. But because they were able to decompress and the nerves, and there was all of this, like I said, they were knotted up, and that was causing nerve damage. So sometimes physical therapy does work and sometimes it doesn't. So persistent or increasing pain accompanied by lack of appetite, unplanned weight loss, nausea and vomiting with fever, chills, and shakes could be an indication of a spinal tumor or infection. So if you have those added things that's on there, you definitely have to get to see a doctor right away. And then chronic neck pain is prolonged pain present for a long duration of time. And it's accompanied by pain that radiates down your arms into the hands and fingers. You could also be sleeping wrong. How do you guys sleep? Do you sleep on your back, your side, your stomach? Do you bring your arms up, like, under your pillow?
I usually start out on my right side, but, you know, once I actually fall asleep, wind up on my back. It also depends on whether or not I remember to put on my CPAP.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because
prefer to sleep on my back and put a pillow under my knees.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, I can't really sleep on my back because of my lower back. My knees actually have to be all bent all the way up because of my L4 and 5 and 6. So cervical herniated disc or foraminal stenosis can be pinching the nerve in the neck, and usually that's the common cause, a pinched nerve. Sometimes traction can help. I've had that many, many, many years ago. It's supposed to help realign your spine. Sometimes it works for a little while, and sometimes it doesn't, and it ends up going right back to the way it was. You could have a herniated disc, and that's why they have to do the MRI, the CT, or X-rays and all that cool stuff. So the intensity of the pain and the extent to which the cervical nerve or spinal cord are affected, usually the symptoms are temporary and can be treated successfully with physical therapy, manipulation, which really works too, the steroids and things like that. And sometimes it's 6 to 12 weeks of physical therapy, and then if nothing's progressing the way it should be, that's when you go and see an ortho doctor. So several structures are responsible for causing neck pain: the bones, the nerves, the disc, the ligaments, muscles, the fossa joints, and the dura. And all of those structures can cause pain if they're irritated or inflamed. Also, they might use a TENS unit, ice packs, or heat. It all depends on what your doctor or physical therapist wants you to use. I've used them all. Some last longer than others. Heat works better for my shoulder and my elbow, and ice works better on my back. I don't know why, but that's just my personal preference. So acute pain is also often of nociceptive origin, but when it becomes a chronic pain, then the influence of psychological and social factors become more apparent. Like, if you're in pain, you don't want to go anywhere. You don't want to do anything. For myself, I got 15 minutes of housework that I could do. I can either stand up and do dishes, or I can sweep the floor or vacuum the floor, and that's it. I can't do it all at once. I got about 15 minutes of anything in me, and I'm done. Let's see. I'm trying to go to the easiest. And so it's basically they're talking about all of your the nerve endings and everything, the nerves going up and down in your spine. Damage or dysfunction of peripheral nerves or the central nervous system can cause neuropathic pain, and neurons may be sensitized to react to even extremely slight stimulus that normally wouldn't cause pain. Neuropathic pain often appears as chronic pain. Reorganization of central processing is thought to be related to this pain state. Also, infections like herpes or herpes zoster, diabetics, traumatic injuries to the spinal cord, and strokes that involve ischemic damage to the pathways are the most common cause of neuropathic pain. So, like I said, poor posture, neck strain, sporting and occupational activities, anxiety and depression, general musculoskeletal problems like rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, fibromyalgia. And think about fibromyalgia. Back in the day, 15 years ago, doctors did not want to diagnose anybody with fibromyalgia. They said it was a fake disease or a fictitious disease, and they just pretty much called everyone a hypochondriac. And a lot of doctors did not want to say it was fibromyalgia. until recently. I think probably in the less than 10 years. Or depending on where you live. Cervical spondylosis, cervical intervertebral disc lesions and prolapse, spinal stenosis, infection of the spine, bone cancer, whiplash, acute spasms, torticollis, which is your neck is turned the wrong way. Also, there's something that's called the soldier's neck, and I'm like, oh, wow, they have something. She's like, no, it has nothing to do with soldiers. My neck is curved the wrong direction. So most people, their spine curves towards the front. Mine curves towards the back, and they can't fix it, apparently, or they won't fix it. It is the VA. But that's what's causing a lot of my neck problems. Some risk factors are workplace-associated risk, poor work design, awkward neck postures, neck flexion, arm posture, how long you're sitting, standing, bending. A lot of the, depending on your job, if like a machine shop, just say, if everything's not within, like if you have to bend over all the time to do your job, they need to either give you like a stool or something to be, it needs to be eye level pretty much. People that use microscopes that work, I used to do, it's called surface mount technology, and we used to make motherboards for all the electronics, and the people at the end who have to inspect the boards, they have to use microscopes, constantly have neck problems because they're always looking down. That's the same reason why they do the ergonomic mouse pads. You know, they have that little bump for your goes for your wrist is to avoid carpal tunnel. Same thing. Same thing with ergonomic chairs. That a lot of people who are office secretaries, you know, and all that stuff, they need a better chair for their back. So some of the symptoms, like I said, like a stiff neck, what they call it, a crick in the neck. Have you guys ever turned your head too fast and you get that sharp pain in your neck? That's another issue. You're not really supposed to do that. And it only hurts for a few minutes, and then it stops. So some of the symptoms is dizziness, fever, burning pain, headache, night sweats, blurred vision, tiredness, and facial pain. So, and some of the possible complications, loss of productivity, not being able to go to work, go to school, basic living, doing your favorite hobbies could be a pain. Weight gain, because you can't get out and do stuff, so you just sit on your butt all day, and you could gain weight. So, and some of the tests they do is x-rays, CAT scan, MRIs, EMGs, and things like that. So, sometimes the people, you know, they could put people in cervical collars for a certain period of time. That helps. Cervical traction, anti-inflammatory medications, muscle relaxants, and some narcotics, but short-term use. The one thing that I was given, like, God, 20 years ago, was Soma compound. It works, but for me, it was too strong, and I didn't particularly care for it. The injections, the steroid injections, you know, they got different types that you can put inside the joint, if that's what it is, and physical therapy. So And if you go to physical therapy, they'll give you exercises to do at home. Sometimes they give you that TheraBand. You know, there's different colors for different strengths, and they'll give you that to work with. So acupuncture does work. And or massage, going to massage therapy or the dry needling will also work. If you have to have dry needling, don't let the needle scare you. They're thin, tiny little fibers, just like acupuncture, except the needles are longer. And it's the same method, and it goes all the way down to the bone. And when the physical therapist, and you have to be specially trained to have this done. So just don't let any freaking Tom, Dick, and Harry touch you. I didn't feel a thing when they did it to my shoulder. I only felt a little bit of it for my elbow. And that's because he hit that nerve and it jumped. But other than that, it was fine. So any questions? Anybody have neck pain?
No.
No. I always have
fine.
Neck pain.
Huh?
I always have neck pain.
Oh, I do too.
Mine's from car accident, though.
It's what?
Mine's from the car accident.
Oh, okay. When you sleep, that's why they say you should only sleep with one pillow, and there's different types. And it's basically you want to keep your spine completely level to where it'll stop that
pain. I actually got one of those My Pillow pillows. And, you know, you put in your weight and you say, you know, what you like. And I actually like the pillow. And whether I'm laying on my side or my back, I definitely see a difference between the My Pillow pillow and my other pillows that I've had over the years. Unfortunately, my cat hogs the pillow. But when my son does that. Yeah. When I have control of the yes, I do notice a big difference. And, you know, like I said, though, I prefer to lay on my back, and then I put – I have, like, a body pillow or whatever that I put under my knees. And then with the My Pillow pillow, I mean, my spine is definitely the way it's supposed to be, and I sleep really well on those nights.
I want to get one of those beds that is supposed – the Sleep Number beds where it contours through your body.
Oh, yeah, those are nice.
Yeah, they're expensive, but they're nice. But I'd love to get one. See, like when I sleep, I can't lay flat on my stomach. What I end up doing is I lay on my stomach, and I always, always, always hike my right leg all the way up. And I'm slightly off my stomach. That's the only way I could sleep on my stomach, and that's it. I can't do it on my left leg for some reason. I don't know. It's my body's like, I don't like this. So
I don't know why, but I cannot lay on my stomach for very long. I mean, it used to be I could at least lay that way, like if I was watching TV or something. But I'm just
my
not
lower back
comfortable
hurts.
On my stomach. Yeah, I'm usually on my right side or my back.
If I right now, I have a twin mattress on my living room floor just because sometimes I like to lay down and watch TV.
Right.
If I lay on my stomach, and you know how you put your pillow up underneath you and you put your arms up, I can only lay that way for so long because it bends my spine too far. So basically what I do is I almost lay on my side. Instead of facing the TV, I lay completely sideways. And
okay.
I can lay like that, and I'm on my side. So,
well, sometimes I'll lay on the floor, and then I'll let my niece walk on my back.
I miss that. I had one of my grandkids walk on my back when she was little, until she was six. And she would shimmy her feet like a little shuffle. but she really wasn't. She was like moving them up and back and forth, but she wasn't lifting her feet up. And my back would, when they say, when someone says, oh, my back is out, I can't bend up. I mean, I can't stand up straight. And so I would have to get on the floor and in pain, and she would walk on my back. And then it's like, oh, my God, now I can move. Have you guys gone to the mall and you see the Asian people, because they're the best at this, with those little contortion chairs you sit on?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. They use their elbows, their wrists, or the palm of their hand. I mean, they really, but it's well worth it, though. It's well worth it if you could find one. The next one is ALS. It's also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, and it's a progressive degeneration of nerve cells that control muscle movement. This disease is the most common motor neuron disease among adults. They named it after Lou Gehrig, the New York Yankees Hall of Fame baseball player. His career ended because of it, and I believe he was the first person to be diagnosed with it. About 30,000 people a year have the disease, and about 5,000 are diagnosed with ALS. And it tends to hit midlife between 40 and 60, but anybody else can get it. Men are one and a half times more likely to have the disease than women.
My son,
it occurs at random. Huh?
My son's cousin has it, and he's in his very early 20s, and a family
member's
had it. Yeah. A friend of our family's had it, and he had it for many years. They said that he was the longest living guy to have it, and he had
usually it's a year. By the time they find it, it's usually a year.
Yeah, no, he lived about, I want to say, about 17 years, if I can remember right. But
after he was
totally
diagnosed with it? Or,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he was wheelchair bound. He could only move his eyes. The nurse had a board that had letters on it, and there was a hole in the center of it, and he would take his eyes and look at the letters, and the nurse would come up with the words for him, and that's how he would communicate.
Oh. Yeah, everything shuts down. It attacks the nerve cells and pathways in the brain and spinal cord, causing the body's motor neurons to waste away, and the result is progressive muscle weakness and coordination, the walking, speaking, swallowing, breathing, and all of that. There's two types of ALS, sporadic and familial. Both have the same signs and symptoms and prognosis. Sporadic ALS is about 90 to 95% of all cases. And the four main causes, they think, is oxidative damage, apoptosis, programmed cell death, exotoxicity, and protein aggregation. Sorry, guys, I'm like, duh, I can't speak. Other possible causes include chronic inflammation and autoimmune processes. While the cause of sporadic ALS is still unknown, it may not be due to any one single thing. And familial ALS is about 5 to 10% of all ALS cases. And genetic plays a part in pretty much all of those cases. And about 20% are caused by a mutation on the gene encoding, the SOD1. So, and the rest of them are genetic mutations. So some of the potential risk factors. Heredity, 5 to 10% of people with ALS inherit it. Most people with familial ALS, their children have a 50-50 chance of getting it. It could strike at any age. However, the risk goes up with age. You could get it between 40 and 60, but sometimes the symptoms start between 55 and 75. If you get it before 65, it's usually men. After that, it doesn't really matter if you're a man or a woman. Genetic-wise, some studies examining the entire human genome found many similarities in the genetic variations of people with familial ALS and some with non-inherited. Smoking increases the risk of ALS, especially in postmenopausal women. Environmental toxins, exposure to specific chemicals or metals like lead, increase the risk of ALS. Because no specific qualities can be predicted of all people diagnosed with it, they don't know what causes it. They have no idea. Classical ALS is a progressive neurological disease characterized by a deterioration of upper and lower motor nerve cells, the neurons. And that particular kind affects about two-thirds of all people with ALS. Primary lateral sclerosis is a progressive neurological disease in which the upper motor nerve cells deteriorate. If the lower motor neurons are not affected within 2 years, the disease usually remains a pure upper motor neuron disease, and that's the rarest form of ALS. PBP, a progressive bulbar palsy, is a condition that starts with difficulty speaking, chewing, and swallowing due to the lower motor nerve cell deterioration, and that affects about 25% of people with it. Progressive muscular atrophy is a progressive neurological disease in which the lower motor neurons deteriorate. And if the upper motor neurons are not affected within 2 years, the disease will usually remain a pure lower neuron disease. So you got it. You can, I guess if you end up with both, then you kind of, you know, it sucks. So researchers still don't know exactly what causes the motor neurons to die with ALS. Gene changes or mutations are behind, like I said, 5 to 10%. More than 12 different gene changes have been linked to ALS. One change is to a gene that makes a protein called SOD1. This protein may be toxic to motor neurons, and other gene changes in ALS might also damage the motor neurons. Environment can also play a role in it. Scientists are studying whether people who come in contact with certain chemicals or germs are more likely to get the disease. People who served in the Gulf War, a lot of them have come up with ALS because of all the toxins that they were exposed to. Bobby, when did you serve? Were you, well, were you in 91 or after?
That was before.
Oh, okay.
Remember,
he's old.
Shield and Desert Shield and Desert Storm era.
Oh, okay. See, like, I know, like, a lot of people, like, when I was in AIT at Fort Sam, when we had to strip the wax from our barracks, we weren't allowed to open the windows. We weren't allowed to open the doors. So we got exposed to all kinds of chemicals that sucked ass, and that's why a lot of us suffer from migraines. course, I got in trouble for that shit, too, but, you know, that's beside the point. Like naval shipyards with the asbestos. Also, the railroad, my uncle and my dad end up with they both worked for the railroad for like 20 years plus. And I can't think of right now off the top of my tongue what the effect of the asbestos in your lungs is in that cancer, and I cannot think of what it's called right now. But yeah, so depending on your job, I would find out what you work with and make sure that they have safety precautions. Glutamate, this chemical sends signals to and from the brain and nerves, and it's a type of neurotransmitter. With ALS, glutamate binds up in the spaces around the nerve cell and can damage them. Ryotech works by lowering glutamate levels and can help slow the development of the disease. Like I said, they've come up with so much technology, new medications. And it's, I don't know how much they've changed with ALS, because like I said, I haven't dealt with, if you don't work in a certain area, you don't keep all that knowledge. There are certain diseases, it's a death sentence, like Huntington's disease. It's only passed down, I believe it's mother to son is how it gets passed down, and it's pretty much like a year. It's a very painful degenerative disease, and so I know at one point ALS was the same way. I don't know what the lifespan is now with ALS, so just pay attention, like I said, to your body and your immune system. So your immune system will protect your body from foreign invaders like bacteria, viruses, and all that cool stuff. In your brain, microglia is the main type of immune cell, and they destroy germs and damage cells. With ALS, the microglia might destroy healthy motor neurons. If you have problems with your mitochondria, that's inside your cells, the little rods. They're the parts of your cell, a part of your cells where energy is made. So a problem with them might lead to ALS or make an existing case worse. Oxidative stress. Your cells use oxygen to make energy. Some of your oxygen your body uses to make energy may form into toxic substances called free radicals, which can damage cells. There's a lot of foods you could eat that help with free radicals and kill them. So there's a book, it's called Foods to Heal. Look into it. Like I said, I've used the book on plenty of the shows. Proper diet does help with a lot of illnesses. Now, I'm not saying it's going to cure it by all means. I said it could help with some of the symptoms or help prevent them. And the medication Endarvone is an antioxidant that can help control the free radicals. So a lot of your antioxidants, like a lot of those drinks, the vitamin waters, they have antioxidants in it. I love them. They taste pretty good. So, and they do have the sugar-free ones as well. So symptoms of ALS. So usually, initially, you'll experience weakness in one of your arms or legs over a matter of days or sometimes a couple weeks. Then several weeks to months later, the weakness develops in the other side. Sometimes the initial problem can be one of slurred speech or difficulty swallowing. As ALS progresses, though, more and more symptoms are noticed. Twitching, cramping of muscles, especially in your hands and feet, loss of motor control in your hands and arms, impairment in the use of your arms and legs, tripping and falling, dropping things, persistent fatigue, uncontrollable periods of laughing or crying. Now that right there, there's actually an illness, I don't say, or condition where someone, it's uncontrollable laughing at an inappropriate time and people think you're like, oh my God, you're so rude. No, it's, there's an actual condition that causes that. Slurred or thick speech and difficulty in projecting the voice. And then as it, the disease progresses, you can have difficulty breathing, swallowing, and then paralysis. Sometimes you may end up on a ventilator. Not in a coma, but on a ventilator. I've taken care of quite a few people on vents. Christopher Reeves, when he fell off a horse and broke his neck, but he was on a ventilator for what was left of his life, but he was able to do, you know, almost what he did before. So the symptoms of ALS may resemble other conditions or medical problems. Like I said, a lot of illnesses mimic other illnesses. So just because you may have some of those, that doesn't mean you have ALS. So just pay attention. Always talk to your doctor. So some of the biggest problems that people with ALS get is like bed sores, pneumonia, collapsed lung, pulmonary aspiration, respiratory arrest, weight loss, and withdrawal or depression. Because once you become bedbound, that's when you have issues with all of that. They do lab tests, blood tests, urine tests, EMGs, nerve conduction studies, an MRI. They could do a spinal tap, a muscle or nerve biopsy, x-rays, all of that. And then, like I said, the couple of medications that I was telling you about. So then you have physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy to help you as long as it can go until your condition worsens. Okay. Next one is dystonia. Dystonia is a neurological disorder that causes excessive involuntary muscle contractions. These muscle contractions can result in abnormal movements and body postures, making it difficult for someone to control their movements. And it can be painful. The dystonic movements are, they say it's typically repetitive and patterned. And so it can affect your eyelids, face, jaw, neck, your vocal cords, torso, limbs, hands, and feet. Depending on the region of the body that's affected, it may look different from person to person. Everything is. Most all disorders, diseases, illnesses, whatever, looks different from person to person. In addition to causing abnormal movements, depression and anxiety are common non-motor symptoms. Of course, depression and anxiety is usually one of the two biggest symptoms mentally because there's something wrong. So it does help to go and speak to a counselor, psychiatrist, psychologist, whatever. So it can affect only one muscle or a group of muscles. And there's a focal dystonia. It's a single region, such as your hands or your eyes. Cervical dystonia, blepharospasm, and that's an abnormal twitch of your eyelid. Laryngeal dystonia and writer's cramp are all examples of focal dystonia. If it only affects someone during specific activities, such as writing, it's described as a task-specific dystonia. I didn't know about that, about writer's cramp. Your hand will lock up. I've had that issue before I had the surgery in my elbow, where my hand will actually, it's the way I've got to contort my hand and leave it that way because it would relieve the pain by stretching. Segmental dystonia is two or more connected regions of the body that are affected. Cranial dystonia, that affects your lower face, jaw, or tongue. Multifocal is two or more regions of the body that aren't connected to each other, such as your left arm and left leg. Generalized dystonia is the trunk and at least two other parts are affected, like the legs may not. Hemidystonia is an entire side of your whole entire side of your body. So it could be the left side or the right side. About 90% of all cases are either cervical dystonia or blepharospasm, which affects the eyelids. And both of them are focal dystonias that tend to develop later in life. And they don't get any worse. So whatever it affects, that's what it affects. Usually it does not get worse. Let's see, we went over that one. So the cervical affects your neck muscles, and it can make your head twist, shake, or pull in one direction uncontrollably. Oromandibular dystonia affects your jaw, tongue, and mouth muscles, and that can lead to problems with eating and speaking. So it kind of looks like Parkinson's, almost. With the uncontrollable shaking or whatever, that's what you can kind of compare it to of what it would look like. Blepharospasm affects the muscles around the eyes, which is why your eye twitches. Writer's cramp affects the hand and forearms and can lead to problems with writing. Also, nerve damage does that too. Laryngeal dystonia can affect your vocal cords or speech muscles, which causes your speech to become strained and weak. There's childhood dystonia and adult dystonia, and they're usually different. If it starts in childhood, it usually begins in the leg or foot, and then it can spread to involve the entire body. If it begins in adulthood, then it usually affects just one part of the body. So there could be a genetic disposition or predisposition. You can have an injury to your brain, a stroke, certain medications like neuroleptics. You could have had a viral, bacterial, or fungal infection, lead poisoning, or any type of heavy metal poisoning. Performing highly precise hand movements such as musicians, artists, or engineers. So, okay, we already went over the causes. Basically, it's all involuntary rapid spasms of any one part of your body, or you're able to speaking. Oh, excuse me. So they can check by blood or urine test, MRI or CAT scan, EMGs, genetic testings. Injections of Botox or Dysport into specific muscles might reduce or eliminate your muscle contractions and improve your abnormal postures. The injections are usually repeated every 3 to 4 months. Like I said, you know, the side effects, mild to temporary to severe and things like that. Everything you ever do has side effects. Carbidol-levodopa is another medication. Cogentin. Some of these are new. Xenazine, Dato, Valium, Clonopin, Baclofen. Clonopin, don't confuse that Clonopin. There's clonazepam or clonidine. There's two different ones. You don't want to confuse the two. A lot of people can't take Clonopin. It didn't bother me. I took it for muscle spasms, and it didn't. It did what it was supposed to. Some people, it makes them nuts. No opinion, no comment from any of you guys. They could also, you could also go to physical therapy, occupational therapy, or speech therapy. They can also do deep brain stimulation, selective denervation surgery, and things like that, biofeedback, yoga, all that cool stuff. Any questions? Comments, concerns?
The brain is an amazing thing. You know, your whole body is. I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, damage to the brain can't be healed, you know, like with neurons and everything. But I saw a video not too long ago that said this actually is not quite true. She was talking about some woman. She just celebrated her something birthday, and she was some kind of research scientist. She came up, she found something or whatever, part of your brain. I mean, it was actually a commercial for something, for some kind of natural medicine. But, you know, not that I'm looking to take the medicine or anything, but the science behind what it was that they discovered is unbelievable. You know, it's utterly fascinating about the neurons that are in your brain, your nerves, you know, like you're talking about different, you know, going for different therapies and everything. Given a chance, I mean, our bodies are amazing things. We only know a fraction of what they're really capable of. And they're learning more and more. I was just listening earlier to a guy that was saying, what was he saying? Something about, again, talking about genetics and stuff. And he was saying that in actuality, what the hell, something about 1%. Like I said, I'd only started listening to it before the blog talk started, but I left it open because I want to finish listening. It's called, genes are only responsible for 1% of the disease. And he was starting to talk about how, you know, how our bodies operate and how they're finding, all these fascinating things that are actually different than what they originally thought. So, you know, when you're talking about physical therapy and massage therapy and all these different therapies, it's unbelievable. When my nephew was an infant, he has Down syndrome. My sister, they did something called patterning. They also did massage therapy. So he had had open heart surgery as an infant. Now, you know how when you have open heart surgery, you have that white scar that goes down the middle of your chest and it bulges out or whatever. My nephew, you can barely see the scar because, you know, not just because of massage therapy, but because, there are vitamin E. There are things that you can put on it in order to decrease the scarring. So you can barely see the scar, and you can't see, there's no bulge or whatever it is that you get from because they have to break open your rib cage. Right. You can't tell. You cannot tell. And she also had something called macrocranial massage. His whole head structure, that's another thing. He does not have the typical facial structure, you know, that you would see with children with Down syndrome because she had all this done. His tongue, unless he is really, really tired, does not hang out of his mouth.
The thing is, it doesn't always do that with all people with Down syndrome because you have different levels.
Yes, I understand that. But what I'm saying is while he was an infant and his skull, his bones were still soft. Do you see what I'm saying? You know, the massaging of it. Because he has a lot of friends, of course, with Down syndrome as well, and you can see the difference. And, yes, I understand there are different levels of on the spectrum of Down syndrome, whether it's their IQ level, their functionality, their physicality, whatever. But, you know, we have seen the difference. They say that a large percentage of children with Down syndrome have to have tubes put in. He didn't, because she immediately, you know, he was never on formula. He didn't do dairy until he was like 10 or 9 or something, you know, 10, 11, something like that. And then very rarely. So he never had any of those problems. My point is like you, again, going back to what you're saying about, you know, like, you know, you get injuries or ALS, or you get this, and you can go for therapy, whether it's physical therapy or heat or TENS or, you know, electric stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the body is amazing in what it can do.
Also, you know what affects a lot of people is being positive, because believe it or
yes.
not, if you're positive about recovery or beating a disease or disorder, it actually helps your body heal. If you're negative, it does affect your whole sense of well-being, and that's why they say you got to keep positive. But
well,
it's hard work.
It is. Even doctors, you know, some of whom, you know, are not necessarily atheists, but whatever, they say prayer helps, because it's
yeah.
the mentality. You know, I don't know, you know, they said that they have seen differences in healing and everything between people who pray or have others pray over them and people who don't. You
yeah.
know, yeah, it like I said, the body is an amazing, it's an amazing machine. And I love it. I love the study of it, that, you know, it's just amazing. The more you learn, the more you realize you need to learn.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the next one we'll go over is Guillain-Barré syndrome, or GBS. And that's a rare neurological disorder. And that's
is that
the
one being caused by the vaccine?
No. No, Parkinson's is what's causing a lot of issues with the vaccines. But you have a nerve. Right, your nerves, and then there's what's called the myelin sheath. It's an insulator. It's like, look at your coaxial cable, all right? The hard wire on the inside, that's your nerve. And the outer part, the myelin sheath, is what protects it. Well, with GBS, it breaks down your myelin sheath.
I lost you.
It can, huh?
I can barely hear you. I don't know if it's my speaker or your phone.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, now
I
hear you.
Okay.
I can hear you.
So GBS can go from very mild with brief weakness to nearly devastating paralysis. And it could put you to where you're on a ventilator. Most people recover from severe Guillain-Barré. But you'll have some degree of weakness afterwards. GBS can affect anyone at any age. Age does not care. And it's estimated that affects 1 out of 100,000 people every year. The incidence increases steadily from 0.62 per 100,000 persons a year younger than 9, and 2.5% per 100,000 for those who are 80 to 89 years old. And the male-to-female ratio is 3 to 2. The different types of GBS are not known. They don't know what causes it, of course. So acute inflammatory demyelinating polyradiculoneuropathy. Ha, huh. Say that one five times real fast.
No,
or
I don't think AID, so.
Or AIDP. Listen, you guys wonder why I get tongue-tied? Because half of these, it's Latin, okay? And it's great. Medical people know Latin, but you can't have a conversation with it. So this is the most common form in the U.S., and the most common sign of AIDP is muscle weakness that starts in the lower part of your body and spreads upwards. Miller-Fisher syndrome is another type, and that starts in your eyes. And it's associated with unsteady gait. And MFS occurs in about 5% of people with GBS. But that's more common in Asia. Acute motor axonal neuropathy, or AMAN, and acute motor sensory anoxal neuropathy, AMSAN, those are less common in the U.S., but both of those are more frequent in China, Japan, and Mexico.
Wow.
So some of the risk factors, you're a guy, you're a young adult, and it can be triggered by an infection. Infection with Campylobacter. It's a type of bacteria often found in undercooked poultry. Influenza, cytomegalovirus, and that cytomegalovirus is only found in HIV patients. Epstein-Barr virus, Zika, hepatitis A, B, C, and E, HIV, mycoplasma pneumonia, surgery, Hodgkin's lymphoma, and rarely influenza vaccines or childhood vaccines. I don't know if you guys saw the pregnant woman who got GBS, and she was like 3 months pregnant. She ended up on a ventilator. They ended up having to do a C-section, and it took almost a year for her to recover from it. And she did, but she got some infection, and that's what caused it. They don't know what causes it, and it usually occurs days or weeks after a respiratory or a digestive tract infection. Rarely recent surgery or immunization can give rise to it, but they've been seeing a large, well, this at the time was last year when this, when they made the app for the book. Zika virus caused a lot of GBS. Our immune system usually fights against only invading organism, but GBS attacks your immune system, and it starts attacking the nerves. The AIDP, the most common type, subtype of the condition, the nerves protecting the myelin sheath is damaged. So think about it. You have your coaxial cable, and your cat or your dog chews on it, and chunks of it starts getting missing of the rubber. You could also crimp the inside. Same thing
right.
with the myelin sheath. If it starts getting damaged, your nerve gets damaged. Like I said, it affects people at any age. It doesn't matter. But you're at a slightly greater risk if you're a guy, period. Okay, so some of the symptoms is muscle weakness and paralysis, jerky, uncoordinated movements, numbness, muscle aches, pains, or cramps, odd sensations such as vibrations, buzzing, or crawling under the skin, blurred vision, dizziness, and breathing problems. Remember, a lot of illnesses mimic other illnesses, so don't panic. I'm like, oh, my God, I got those. right now, the biggest thing that concerns me is every time I stand up, from my knee, it's up my thigh, it's killing me. And it only happens when I go to stand up. And I swear to God, it feels like I've exercised for a month straight and never stopped. So, yes, the ALS, MS, and MD, all of that's been going through my head, but it probably has nothing to do with any of those. But like I said, so... I also have restless leg syndrome. thanks to the military and all the great things we get exposed to. So the symptoms typically start in the feet and the legs and progress up the body. Sometimes they start in the arms and progress downwards. So, you know, and go either way. So some of the complications, you can have lingering weakness, numbness, or odd sensations even after recovery, heart or blood pressure problems, pain, slow bowel or bladder function, blood clots, and bed sores due to paralysis. So kind of like COVID, I got over it in 2 weeks, but the fatigue and the headaches lasted for 3 months. So kind of like same, not the same thing, but you know what I'm saying? So you could have something, but some of your side effects can linger, and it just depends on your own body. About 50% of cases also include a recent history of infection, like a sore throat, a cold, or the flu, or diarrhea. So they can check your cerebral spinal fluid, nerve conduction velocity, an EMG. There's no cure for it. So basically it's supportive measures. Hospitalization is usually necessary for the initial stages, as the course of the condition can be unpredictable. So if it's really severe, they help you maintain breathing, reduce pain, maximize muscle strength, joint movement, and they keep you from getting contractures. And that's if you don't move, or if you leave your arm or your leg, your hip, whatever, in one position, it can be locked and stuck in that one position. So they can do plasma exchange, immunoglobulin therapy. Let's see. So the primary prevention, sometimes vaccinations may trigger the occurrence of GBS. So hence, vaccination is not suggested in the acute phase and up to a period of 1 year after an episode of GBS. There is an increase in cases of GBS where a Zika virus is circulating. And like I said, they've been looking to see if that was a reason. But Zika virus, I don't think it's anymore, or it's not really prevalent. Same thing with West Nile virus and all of those from the mosquitoes and all that. So it's probably going to depend on where you live in the world. So, and when possible, they usually put patients in ICU because it's a one nurse to maybe two patients. So, but you can recover from it. I'm going to skip down. I'm going to go over some of these other ones here. Tay-Sachs, it's a genetic disorder that destroys the nerve cells in the brain and spinal cord. And it's caused by the deficiency of an enzyme. Hold on, I'm going to have to pronounce this really slowly. Hexosaminidase A. Thus, it accumulates much fat and lipid cells, or lipids called gangliosides, in the brain and the nerve cells. Now, the thing about Tay-Sachs, it's predominantly a Jewish illness and children. In infants, it occurs in the fetus early in the pregnancy, and after 2 years, the baby experiences seizures and diminishing mental function. The affected children lose motor skills. They can't sit, stand, turn, crawl, and they usually die by age 5. It can also affect adults and teens. Thus, it causes less severe symptoms, and it's very rare. So in 1881, Warren Tay, a British ophthalmologist, observed a cherry red spot in the retina of a 1-year-old child with mental and physical retardation. Later in 1896, Bernard Sachs, an American neurologist observed extreme swelling of neurons in autopsy tissue from infected children. He also noted that the disease seemed to run in families of Jewish origin. Now, when I say of Jewish origin, that doesn't mean if you convert to being Jewish. If you're born Jewish with Jewish parents, not saying it's going to happen because it wouldn't be a Jewish nation if it was every single person. Both physicians were describing the same disease, but it was not until 1930s that the material causing the cherry red spot and the neuronal swelling was identified as a ganglioside lipid, and the disease could be recognized as an inborn error of metabolism. So that's why they started, in the 60s, that's why they called it Tay-Sachs. Epidemiology of it, one per 360,000 newborns in the general population can be affected. One in 280 individuals is a heterozygous unaffected carrier of a hexa mutation. The incidence in French Canadians of Eastern St. Lawrence River Valley area of Quebec is similar to that of a person of Ashkenazi Jewish descent. In Cordoba region of Argentina, among the Creole, Spanish, and Native people, one in 26 individuals is a carrier. Increased frequencies were reported in Moroccan Jews. One in 110 is a carrier, as well as some isolated populations in Switzerland and Japan. One in 140 Iraqi Jews is a carrier. I did not know there were Jews in Iraq. In Saudi Arabia, the cause is private mutations, which prevents replicating the successful approach used by the Ashkenazi Jew population. Therefore, alternative solutions must be implemented for other autosomal recessive diseases. That's why there's an importance of checking, doing the, you know, before you get married, before you have kids, they check your blood for genetic testing because of a lot of these issues. Tay-Sachs varies based on the age, individuals, and symptoms. Juvenile Tay-Sachs occurs in children and leads to decline in their ability to walk and eat on their own. It's very painful. A child with first symptoms at age 2 will decline faster than a child with symptoms at age 5. Some newborn infants are born with it. But like I said, it's a very debilitative, painful disease for children. Late onset Tay-Sachs. This type mostly occurs in adults with late onset Tay-Sachs. Slowly decline. So the older you are, the slower you decline. And so some of the early symptoms of late onset Tay-Sachs include clumsiness, muscle weakness in the legs. Once the adult is diagnosed, they may experience their childhood as not being athletic, having speech difficulties and or a stutter as a child or a teenager. So pretty much you could have had it your whole life and it just never showed up. Classic infantile Tay-Sachs, this type occurs during the time of birth and thus typically continues to develop for the first 6 months. And around 6 months, the development slows, and parents may notice a reduction in vision and tracking. You know when most children start able to see beyond their own face, you'll notice that the children can't see you, or they can't track where you're moving, and they outgrow normal starter response. Children gradually regress, losing one skill at a time. And they're unable to crawl, turn over, sit, or reach out. And then they get to where they can't swallow or breathe. So some of the at risk, like I said, is Eastern European Ashkenazi Jews at greater risk for Tay-Sachs. children can only have Tay-Sachs disease if both parents are carriers. So if one's a carrier and the other one's not, it's okay. People of French-Canadian, Cajun heritage, and Irish heritage also have been found to have Tay-Sachs, have the Tay-Sachs gene. So some of the causes, a missing enzyme. The gene Hex A and the DNA provides instruction for making the enzyme, and the accurate amount of Hex A enzyme, which is the lipid or fatty substance called GM2, that accumulates on the nerve cells of the brain. So typically the infantile Tay-Sachs is due to the absence of the Hex A enzyme. It's the autosomal recessive genetic disorder, which means both parents are a carrier. Like I said, they both have to be a carrier. So, and I went over all of the, the symptoms. Went over the side effects. So basically a diagnostic test is an eye exam, enzyme assay, the baseline levels of Hex A enzymes, DNA testing. They could check the prenatal, the amniotic fluid, the chorionic villi sampling or CVS sampling, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. Let's see. So basically for medications is to control the seizures. Tricyclic antidepressants are thought to be ineffective, and so that's why they don't use them. Respiratory care, feeding tubes are usually put in, and physical therapy. So that tis be all. Any questions? Or anything?
Yeah, what do you know about monkeypox?
Monkeypox is, it's kind of like, remember when we went over the vaccines and stuff, and it talked about cowpox and, hold on, I'll look it up real quick for you.
Because
I know
some dude arrived in Texas from Nigeria with monkeypox, and now 200
yeah.
people in 27 states have it.
Do what?
Monkeypox, P-O-X.
No,
like
I know. How many people is what I was trying to get to?
Well, some dude arrived in Texas at the airport,
yeah.
and he had it. Well, now, it just came out maybe an hour ago, 200 people in 27 states have now been diagnosed with monkeypox.
Wow. You know where it starts? In Nigeria.
Yes.
So basically, yeah, that's what's coming up as I'm trying to look up monkeypox. I don't really care about the Nigeria part. Okay. So
I want to know what he was doing with that damn monkey to get it.
Well, the same thing with cowpox. So monkeypox is an infectious disease that's caused by the monkeypox virus that can occur in certain animals, including humans. Symptoms begin with fever, headache, muscle pain, swollen lymph nodes, and feeling tired. It's followed by a rash that forms blisters and crust over, just like chickenpox. The time from exposure to onset of symptoms is around 10 days, usually lasts 2 to 5 weeks, and can be spread from handling bushmeat, an animal bite or scratch, or bodily fluids, contaminated objects, or close contact. So basically, the monkey could have scratched him. He could have bit him. It could have been, like I said, it could have been any of those things. And in Nigeria, you know, some areas, they're not exactly clean. So that has a lot to do with it. So The virus is believed to normally circulate among certain rodents in Africa. Diagnosis can be confirmed by testing a lesion for the virus's DNA, and it looks similar to chickenpox.
It said it's not as deadly, though, as smallpox?
If you've had the smallpox vaccine, which most of us have not.
I did. They
remember when we
smallpox
went over it? Yeah,
in,
remember
in
when
1972.
We yeah, I didn't get it. I was born in 71.
Well, I did. I'm the star to prove it.
I know. And how old were you, though?
What do you mean, how old was I?
How old were you in
72? I was born in 1964. Yeah.
I was a newborn. They stopped in 72, 73, or whatever. So anyway, the smallpox vaccine can prevent the infection. In 2019, a vaccine was approved for the disorder in the United States. There's no cure, but there's two antivirals that can be used, and the death rate is about 10%, up to 10%. So the thing is, the reason when they were making the smallpox vaccine, they used cowpox and monkeypox, the fluid from the pustules, and that's how they came up with the smallpox vaccine. And then they got some of the fluid from the vesicles from people who had smallpox, and he also used that too. So it eradicated smallpox, but that'll probably be sure the next damn thing that goes around. So, it's not as dead. It's nowhere near as deadly as smallpox. So that's a good thing. But that's pretty much it. But let me look how. How contagious. Basically, you've got to come in contact with the person. So you got to be in close contact with the person who's got monkeypox. So, yay! Another plague to come around the world. But that's all I got, guys. Anything else?
No.
No? Okay. Excuse me.
Not all fans.
Yeah, don't do that.
Huh? Oh. I deleted my... I got to tell you, this is something... This is how stupid people are. I deleted my TikTok. TikTok could kiss my white ass. Oh, I got rid of it. Oh, no. Do you know why? I got a multiple communist community, I call it communist community violation, because I said some transgender men who can't hack it, it's because the woman who's the weightlifter, she was a guy and she couldn't hack it. He couldn't hack it in men's weightlifting, and he would never go beyond 13th place. So he decided
right.
to say, I'm a woman, became a woman, and now he's beating all of the women. And so I said, some of these men who say they can't hack it in men's sports, so they want to come over, become a woman, and dominate women's sports because you're weak and pathetic. And somebody complained. Not more, not one, not two, but multiple people complained that I said that. So I said, I appealed it, and I said, kiss my ass, and I deleted the app. I don't care. it's ridiculous. That's why I put that. And so I'm done with these pansy-ass friggin' I have no respect for transgender people. I'm sorry. and that affects me. It's harsh. I don't care anymore. You know what it is? It's mostly the men who transition to women only because of whatever sick, twisted thing is in their mind, like the one that was the MMA fighter who broke the woman's face and bones and ribs. That's the only reason why. I mean, honestly, I don't believe one man who transitions. No, I'm sorry. And people can call me hateful all they want. I'm done with because you guys have
me. Is, you know, because everybody wants to be woke, so now the first woman trans woman won the beauty pageant. The first trans woman is up for an Oscar or something for a woman's role, and you know he's going to win it. The first trans woman is going to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated swimsuit. You know, and I'm not saying that these aren't beautiful. I mean, they're beautiful trans women, but they need to have their own category. It's not fair to biological women. Now, that being said, the feminists have done this to themselves. I feel no pity whatsoever for the females that are losing out because they did not.
Oh
fight
no, I
this.
Hate feminists. I can't stand a feminist. I'll throat punch a bitch if I see one.
You know, I watch Tim Pool. Oh wait, we only got 3 minutes left. I'll tell you about it in Telegram. But Tim Pool read a letter today written by a woman during suffrage about why she did not agree with women voting.
Well, go ahead, Bobby.
Yeah, it was really good.
I'm leaving tomorrow, so if you guys want to do a show Thursday, I won't be back until Saturday night.
Oh, where
so
are
Bobby,
you going?
Except for you guys. I'm going on a fishing trip.
Yeah, I'll look some things up. I'll do the show.
I don't think we're going to be fishing at night, so I'll let you know.
Where are you going fishing?
Missouri.
Missouri.
All right, we got a minute.
Missouri. Go ahead, Bobby.
So thanks for another great show. Thank you for participating, Lorna and Maria. God bless America. God bless our children, first responders, veterans, and our troops. And God bless the Defender 7. Good night, everybody.
Good night.